Hello, the Wisconsin Badgers podcast joins you for our second episode. We've got a game to talk about. The Badgers took on Western Kentucky on Friday, handled the non-conference challenge with ease, as expected, winning 34-3. Defense looked phenomenal, judging by that number three at the end. That should be fairly obvious. The offense moved the ball pretty well. Jonathan Taylor, the Badgers' top Heisman candidate, had a couple touchdowns, couple long touchdown runs, and for the most part, business as usual. The only thing that was a little out of the ordinary was the Friday night kickoff, 8 o'clock at Camp Randall. Things are going to get a little more conventional this week with a 11 o'clock kickoff at Camp Randall on Saturday against New Mexico. And we are officially in the middle of the college football season. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Wisconsin Badgers podcast. In a minute, I'll be joined by Jeff Patricus, Badgers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He catches you up on everything that happened in that game, gives his thoughts, very good analysis on some of the position battles, some of the players who stood out. We saw Alex Hornibrook have a really good game. We talked about him. We talked about Jonathan Taylor a little bit, but also Scott Nelson on defense really had a standout performance. Redshirt freshman safety who looked very good, big playmaker. Caesar Williams, who's a very important player in the cornerback unit with Dante Carrier-Williams stepping aside to start the year, or leaving the program, I should say. That's definitely somebody to watch, in my opinion. And, we talked about a few other guys that John Dietzen, Cole Van Lannen sharing some time at left tackle, and we talked about that rotation and what to expect with that going forward. Some of the other newer faces who made some plays, Fayon Hicks, Aaron Cruikshank come to mind, Jake Ferguson as well. We talked about all of that on this week's edition of the podcast. Running real quickly down the numbers from this game, Alex Hornibrook, 17 of 29 passing for 257 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Remember, that passing unit was missing 3 pass catchers, Quintez Cephas, who is facing a 2-game suspension, and quite possibly a lot more as he faces sexual assault charges, and Danny Davis, who was also on a 2-game suspension related to that incident. Both of them were out, of course. And then Xander Neville, the tight end, who is a weapon in the passing game, not available as he's coming back from injury. So to have none of those guys and to still be able to move the ball through the air is pretty encouraging. AJ Taylor leading the way with 5 catches for 85 yards. On the ground, Jonathan Taylor, 145 yards, his 2 touchdowns. He did average 8.1 yards per carry. Nothing wrong with that. Did fumble the football, which is a bad sign, but again, probably what you would have expected from Jonathan Taylor, a solid plus 100 rushing performance. Garrett Groshek had a long rushing touchdown sort of to cap things off. Special teams looked phenomenal, specifically kicker Rafael Caglinone, who's been battling injuries this year. He was pretty much unfazed in his work. He did make 2 field goals, buried all 4 extra points. And, Aaron Cruikshank flashed some serious, exciting speed on one return. It's a small sample of material to work with there, but a true freshman who could be pretty exciting this year. And Anthony Lottie, the punter, my goodness, what a showing for him. We talked about him. I talked about him with Jeff Patricus as well. So without further ado, let's get into it. Let's talk to Jeff Patricus about this first game of the year. Here once again is Jeff Patricus, Badgers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can find his treasure trove of content, tons and tons of Badgers content over the last couple weeks, and of course coverage of this win over Western Kentucky. So Jeff, we saw things go pretty much according to script, I would think. Alex Hornibrook looked very good, 2 touchdown passes, no interceptions. Jonathan Taylor with 2 touchdowns, over 140 yards rushing. Again, probably just what we thought. The defense had a pretty good performance. Who, if you're looking at this game, gets your game balls for the first outing of the season?
Well, I think if you're going to start on defense, I'd probably go with Scott Nelson, the redshirt freshman safety, paired with senior Dakota Dixon. You know, they talked about Nelson a lot in the spring. He's about 6'2", 200 pounds, rangy, will hit. He's not afraid to hit. And they said by the end of last year, he was ready to play and help them, but they didn't want to burn his redshirt here. So no surprise he got the start. No surprise he has a good nose for the ball. Missed on a sack, could have had an interception, but he is going to make plays for them this year and beyond. He's a really good athlete and a very smart player. Offense, probably go with Hornibrook. You're going into the game with a line that hadn't been together in camp a lot because of some minor injuries. You're down Quintez Cephas and Danny Davis at wide receiver. You're down Xander Neville at tight end. And for the most part, I thought he made smart decisions. His footwork was better overall than it was last season, and that led to some really accurate throws.
So let's go back to Nelson, that defense. Obviously, you've got to throw in all the caveats. This is an opponent that isn't as tough as what they're going to see later in the season. But the defense with all those new faces looked really good, and Nelson was in the middle of it. And you talked about the things he didn't do. You got to figure as he gets more game experience, he's going to get those things too. I know you envisioned that he would be a really good player this year for them. Does seeing this game maybe even accelerate those expectations? Like maybe he's going to be a true standout in that secondary?
No, I mean, I expected him to be good just based on watching him in practice last spring, because Dixon was out last spring, you know, after off-season surgery, and had some other guys nicked up. So he got a lot of work, and you could see in the spring, because every practice was open to us, you could see how sharp of a player he was going to be. So I would expect, I mean, that secondary is going to give up plays. You got a lot of young guys back there. There's going to be times where they're going to give up deep balls, or they're going to have missed tackles, but I think Scott Nelson is going to be, he's further along, trying to think of the last safety they had as a redshirt freshman who really jumped off the page, and I'd have to go back and look. It's been quite a while, so he's further along than a lot of guys they've had at that position.
He wasn't the only first-year player that had a really nice night. Obviously, I mean, Jake Ferguson's another guy. He's a redshirt guy, too. So it's not like these guys are rookies, per se. We saw Fan Hicks make a play. Aaron Cruikshank with some serious flashes, some serious excitement there from the true freshman. You know, this isn't something I really officially keep track of, how much Paul Christ has used freshmen and redshirt freshmen relative to his predecessors, particularly the true freshmen. Do you think that he does that more than the guys who've coached before him, or is this pretty much on par with what Wisconsin has done?
I mean, it generally varies from year to year, first of all. I mean, there are some teams you need guys to step up. For example, Cruikshank really didn't, you know, he flashed on the kickoff, but, you know, they used Jack Dunn, who's a little more of a veteran guy in the system, at wide receiver as basically the third guy. And, you know, you got to remember they're down two wide receivers. So Dunn probably doesn't get a lot of reps in that situation. Ferguson was going to play based on what we saw in the spring, just because he can help them as a receiver. Although he made a couple nice blocks in the game, which kind of caught my eye and surprised me a little bit. So it varies from year to year. And the one thing that's different about this year, and we'll have to monitor this as the season goes on, with the rule that allows you to play kids four games and still retain a year of eligibility, they're going to kind of play that by ear, because the fans think, oh, we'll just play them in these non-conference games to get some experience. But what they're weighing is, let's see how these guys develop, and what if we need them late in the year, say for the last four games, if a starter goes down or a number two goes down with an injury, and we need to pop those guys in. So they're kind of weighing that right now. That's one factor that's different from previous years.
Yeah, I never thought about that. That's something you'd think, like you're saying, you'd think the solution to that would be to play the guys early, and if they're not panning out, but what you bring up is a good point, too. So one guy I was watching a lot isn't a newbie, per se. Caesar Williams did appear in a couple games last year, but obviously the cornerback position is very thin. Dante Carrier-Williams leaves the team really in the week leading up to this first game, and now Caesar Williams is front and center as a guy that they really can't live without as a cornerback. How do you think he fared? He's certainly a guy to watch here in the early going.
Yeah, he was solid. He had a nice little pass breakup where he was right on his guy and reached in, I think, with his left arm. And he's got some length to do that. It'll be interesting because later on this week, we're going to have a story on Caesar Williams and Fayon Hicks. Not saying that they're going to be this all Big Ten tandem by any stretch, but they both have had to take a long road to get to where they are today to start that opener. Fayon Hicks came in. Banged up a shoulder. He was out for about 5 months. That's a lot of developmental time. Caesar Williams, after the bowl game, you know, in winter conditioning, Jim Leonard told us this in the spring. He said, I saw a different guy in the winter in Caesar Williams than I had before, and I talked to Williams about that, and I said, what was the change for you, that you worked harder? He goes, I was tired of being on the bottom. He goes, I was just tired of not having a chance to play. So the reason that he's there, and he missed time with an injury as well, the reason that he's there is he busted his butt starting in the winter, and he said, he goes, you've got to work hard all the time, not just on the field, and that's something I had to learn. So both of those guys have had a long road, and at least for now, they're starters, and whether they're starters or not, they're going to get significant playing time.
If there was sort of a, quote, downside to the defense, it was the pass rush, but that doesn't really come as a surprise. They did throw for 181 yards, Western Kentucky did, but again, that's not the end of the world either. How would you grade the performance in that department, and I guess specifically, where do you see it going from here? I'm guessing it's going to be a work in progress for the first part of the season.
Well, I thought, and I know a lot of people asked me before the season, oh, the secondary is a big question mark on defense. Secondary. I said, no. I said, I see a lot of guys back there. Now, this is before Kerry Williams left. I said, but I see guys back there who can run and compete. They're athletic. I said, my biggest question on defense is, do they have playmakers in the front seven, whether it's outside linebacker or up on the line? And their most disruptive lineman with Garrett Rand out for the year is Isaiah Loudermilk, who is out. You know, he's still projected. He wants to be back to get one game under his belt before the Big Ten opener. You got Caden Lyles, who was an offensive lineman. He's not going to be a pass rusher. He's going to eat up blocks and be good against the run. Sangopoulos the same way. You got Matt Henningsen, a walk-on, who at the end of spring wasn't projected to be a starter. And he was a starter, in my opinion, because based on what I saw in the first week of camp, Aaron Volpal, a redshirt freshman, who was one of the ends in the spring, just didn't flash, didn't do anything. So you've got guys who aren't going to get in the backfield and get up to quarterbacks, and I'm still curious to see if anyone other than Ben Ginkle can show that outside linebacker. Now, the one caveat I'll say is that, you know, if you look at the way Jim Leonard called plays in that game, it was vanilla upon vanilla upon vanilla. So he's not going to show his hand early, and there's a lot of schematic things he can do yet. But that still, to me, is the one question I have. Can guys at the front seven get after the quarterback?
Yeah, I think even when they were sort of in a spread look, it was still vanilla defense. So that you're right about that. It's hard to really gauge what they're doing because they're obviously not going to show too much here in the early going. Going to the offensive side of the ball, Alex Hornibrook talked about him at the outset. He played very well. It did not look like he was missing three guys who are going to feature prominently if they have their druthers in the passing game. It seemed like even there were a lot of near misses that suggest that there's going to be a lot available to this passing game. We saw Taylor make some big plays in the passing game. I mean, is there anything out of the ordinary that with the receivers or anything that jumped out at you, or was this just a standard kind of what you would have expected?
Pretty much as I expected, based on the personnel available at the time. I didn't know how much we'd see Cruikshank and fellow freshman Taj Mustafa at wide receiver. We really didn't see that, you know, and we haven't talked to the offensive coordinator, Joe Rudolph, or wide receivers coach Ted Gilmore since the game. So not sure if there was a certain plan going in that they didn't see unfold and they just kind of held back a little bit. We'll see about that as the season goes on. But obviously, if Danny Davis returns after missing game two here and comes back for the BYU game, that gives you a third option, a really talented third option. And by then, you expect to have Xander Neville back at tight end. So that'll change things. So I'm curious to see. I think there's talent there. Because if you put a guy like Cruikshank out as, say, your fourth receiver, maybe with a tight end if you want to go empty set, Cruikshank's going to be matched up on somebody who might not be able to handle him. And I think that's where you can take advantage for that kid.
I wasn't planning to even ask about Jonathan Taylor, but just real quickly, he does have the two long touchdowns. He looks fine. He did fumble the ball. Would you grade him out as sort of a B for the game? Is that kind of safe to say, or is that fumble sort of trumping everything else that he had done in the contest?
It doesn't trump anything else, but you've got to be cognizant of it simply because his fumble rate, I don't have the numbers in front of me again, but it went up quite a bit in the second half of last season versus the first. You know, he ran the ball. I thought he missed a few holes at times. And I think Chris alluded to that after and post game that there's some things they can work on there. You know what? It's a first game for everybody. And so he had a solid game in the Orange Bowl, but you're going to have first game. You had first game rust on the offensive line. You had some Taylor missing a chance to make a back shoulder catch on a little wheel route. So there were some rough edges all around. I've seen that so many times over the years, it really doesn't surprise me. In fact, it's the norm that you're going to see some things where they look a little bit unsettled, whether it's offense, defense, special teams. So nothing really surprising. He just got to hold on to the ball better. Just asked him.
On the offensive line, John Dietzen and Cole Van Lannen, there was a little bit made about that sort of competition for the spot at left tackle. Based on what I've read from you, you sort of suggest that this isn't really something to focus on, that, you know, both those guys are competent. You're going to see them a lot at different points in the season. We saw a lot of Van Lannen in the latter part of the game. I'm guessing that dynamic is going to be kind of 50-50 until one clearly rises above the other, if that ever happens. Is that kind of how you look at it as well?
No, I mean, Deaton's basically on a pitch count because, you know, he had off-season surgery on both hips for played with torn labrums last year. So they gave him time off in camp. What they're basically going to do is, I mean, I always thought that Deaton was going to be the starter because he had a little more experience than Ben Lang. And unlike a lot of people who worried about, well, who's going to start at left tackle? We need to know. Joe Rudolph doesn't care who starts. He cares who finishes and whether he can use one or two guys at that position. I think what you're going to see, based on just looking at some of the things Van Lannen did, I thought he held up really well. He's got good feet. He was a shot and a discus guy in high school. So he's got size, strength, and good footwork. I would expect Deaton to continue to start. And it's basically, if Deaton needs a break, Van Lannen's ready to step in any time. And that's they gave Deaton basically the second half off, gave Van Lannen all the reps he needed, and that's going to help him as the season goes on. And you'd rather have two guys who can play that position. Because, for example, if Michael Dieter, who was the left tackle last year, had gone down with an injury, I don't know that they had a second guy just ready to pop in there without shifting more than one person around. They have that luxury this year.
You know, last week we talked about the kicking game focused entirely on Rafael, and who, by the way, looked very good. I feel terrible for not even mentioning Anthony Lottie. Holy smokes, the punter had just a tremendous game, and, you know, he's gone from being a guy that you don't think a lot about. I mean, that guy's a weapon when he's punting like that.
You know, it's interesting because when he came out of high school, all the video you saw of him was with these booming punts, distance and hang time. And he struggled with that at Wisconsin when he first got here. But he's always been really good at the Aussie style, where it goes end over end. And generally, if you hit it right, it hits and either kicks sideways or kicks straight up. So he does a good job with that. I talked to Chris Herring, the special teams coach, who said that Lottie had kind of worked on his process to streamline it a little bit, you know, get it off quicker. And you would think that the older you get, the stronger you get, the better you're going to be able to hit the ball consistently. So they expect him to be a weapon this year from beginning of the season to the end.
So Badgers play on Friday, Saturday. That we saw a few other Big Ten games. Michigan, of course, lost to Notre Dame. Penn State, I really thought they were going down against Appalachian State. Funny that I mentioned Appalachian State against Michigan last week, and we nearly saw a little repeat of history. Did you learn anything about, from what you saw Saturday, did you learn anything about the Big Ten that we didn't already know?
I'll stick with Michigan and Penn State because I got to see those games. Penn State, I had questions about both teams. One was Penn State lost Saquon Barkley and its offensive coordinator, who's now the head coach at Mississippi State. But their offense wasn't the issue against App State. So I wonder if the bigger issue will be how that defense develop. Michigan, they got a new quarterback, a new offensive line coach. And to me, the offensive line play has been the biggest weakness since Harbaugh took over at Michigan, which is shocking because his offensive lines are really good and powerful. And at Stanford, they just ran people over. So as I watched Michigan Saturday night, I watched their line and I was not impressed with their offensive line. And the quarterback's mobile, but, you know, he was under duress far too much. And their wide receivers, they lost Tariq Black to perhaps for the year again with a foot injury, and their wide receivers don't scare you. So as good as that defense is, you keep putting too much pressure on Michigan's defense, and I don't know if that offense is good enough to bail it out.
Next week, the Badgers will face New Mexico again back at Camp Randall Stadium. I asked you last week if there was any chance of one of those crazy upsets happening with Western Kentucky, and you said not a chance. That proved to be true. What about New Mexico? What elements there could potentially give the Badgers some fits?
Well, believe it or not, I was able to find some video on the web from an Albuquerque TV station of New Mexico's victory over Incarnate Word on Saturday night. And New Mexico's got a quarterback who they run like a spread option. Their quarterback is really mobile, appeared to throw well on the run, so they've got some weapons on offense. But Bob Davey, after the game, was clearly not happy with the defense, which, by the way, is coordinated by former UW assistant Kevin Cosgrove. So their defense really struggled. So I would expect Wisconsin to be able to move the ball more consistently, especially early in the game in week two than it did in week one. But I'm curious to see. I think it would be a good test for the defense because that quarterback will stress the defense both with his arm and his feet. And I think that's a good thing for Wisconsin and Jim Leonard to see in week two.
All right, last question. Just kind of who are we not talking about in this podcast yet? Who is a player that really stood out, or an element of the game that really stood out? Maybe even a sneak peek into what you're going to be writing about this week as we head into that New Mexico game.
Oh, well, the obviously one story on Fayon Hicks and CeeDee Williams and their road to get to where they are. I just wrote a story for tonight. It'll run sometime this week on Ben Lannon because I looked at the tape and I liked what I saw of him, and I had talked to him both before the game and after the game. And one thing we wrote about after the game, but it's kind of, you take it for granted, is the kicker. I mean, he is now, I think it's 28 out of 31 field goal attempts dating back to the Cotton Bowl. I mean, and especially with the questions about his back, and he missed about 2 weeks in camp, yet both kicks really well. I mean, that's a guy you want. He's got four game-winning kicks. He doesn't get fazed by pressure. And there are going to be some games where it may come down to a last-second kick this year with their schedule. And that's a kid you want on the field in those situations.
Yes, I love Rafael Gaglianone. He is one of my favorites. I think that's true for a lot of people who watch the Badgers. Jeff Patricus, you can find all of his content at jsonline.com. Thank you so much, Jeff. We'll catch you again next week.
Okay, we'll talk to you.
That'll do it for this edition of the Wisconsin Badgers podcast. Again, that's an 11 a.m. kickoff on Saturday as the Badgers prepare to take on New Mexico. Keep up to date with the preseason material. You heard from Jeff, some of the things you can expect this week at jsonline.com. Got to tell you, there is still time if you get a chance to go check out jsonline.com/deal. The Labor Day sale that was running last week is still going to be with you for another few days. You have got to check this out. New subscribers can get as much as 3 months of journal digital access for just $1. You got to take advantage of this deal. There's deals for print subscribers too, if you want to get the paper in your hands. But I know a lot of you guys are accessing journal content on your phones, on your tablets, wherever. This is the place to go. jsonline.com/deal. We are now in iTunes. Took us a little minute to get there, but we are wherever you get your podcasts, the Wisconsin Badgers podcast and the Milwaukee Brewers podcast for that matter, and the Green Bay Packers podcast, all from the Journal Sentinel. Be sure to find these things in Apple Podcasts, like them, review them, rate them. Tell me on Twitter if you want. What you'd like to see. My Twitter address, I guess, this is the wrong word, but it's at J.R. Radcliffe is the handle. That's J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Let me know what you'd like to see, and we'll try to implement that going forward. Got a lot of games left on the docket that we can craft this podcast however we'd like, so we're going to try to make it a worthwhile addition to your podcast queue each week. Thanks for listening. For Jeff Patricus, again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. Catch you next week on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Wisconsin Badgers podcast. Thanks very much.